Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be those of Representative Charles Key, who's a member of the state legislature in the state of Oklahoma. And, of course, we got to know Charles back at the time after the bombing of the Murrah Building. There was a good deal of question as to what really happened. Of course, most people have put this behind them. After all, they executed Timothy McVeigh. He and Terry Nichols alone were involved in that. But to this very day, if you try to get hold of the videotapes that were shot outside of the Murrah Building this has been done repeatedly on that fateful morning when 168 people were killed. Why, the government says, oh, you can't have those. There's an ongoing investigation. We can't let you see who was in the truck along with Timothy McVeigh. Well, that's a subject that's long since passed. Representative Key did his best to bring out the truth, that we were not being told the truth about the murder of 168 Americans that morning. But now he's back in the state legislature. Fortunately, he was forced to leave. They did everything they could to silence him. But he finally got back in the state legislature, and he's working on a number of issues dealing with this attack on our freedom. And so, without further ado, Charles Key, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me again, Dr. Monteith. It's really good to be with you again.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you see as the issues facing the state of Oklahoma, and are you as concerned about the move towards the establishment of some sort of an authoritarian structure here in America as I am, and as many of our listeners are?
Yes, I am, and I'm really pleased to be able to say Oklahoma's doing a lot of things kind of on the forefront of trying to address this problem. And one of the things that we're doing is, and I'm the author of the 10th Amendment Resolution. Here in Oklahoma, we passed it out of the Oklahoma House last year, and we've refiled it for this session and believe we'll pass it out of both the House and the Senate. And it's a bill that states that the federal government has violated over and over and over again the Constitution, and particularly the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, which says that the federal government has specific limited powers that it's been granted, and it has no other powers or authority other than the specific ones granted to it by the Constitution. And further, the bill tells the federal government to stop violating the Constitution, get back in its constitutional role. And it's really, I describe it as kind of a line in the sand to the federal government to get back in your place. It's the first step in taking action against the federal government to correct what they've been doing, and that is becoming a law unto themselves and just violating our Constitution, actually destroying it over several decades now.
And of course, the thing is that all our legislators, every congressman, every senator, the president, the vice president, the members of his cabinet, the members of the judiciary, all swear to uphold the Constitution and defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So the 10th Amendment is very, very specific in what it says, and that is that specifically all power not specifically granted to the United States by the Constitution or limited to it by the states are limited to the states and to the people. In other words, it's a restrictive covenant on what the federal government can do, and most of what goes on in Washington, D.C. is unconstitutional. And I think it's exciting that at least there in the state of Oklahoma, while you've passed the resolution saying, let's get back to our Constitution. We got a lot of breakers in Washington, D.C., unfortunately, and we'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, Charles, what sort of response did you get from the legislators there in Oklahoma when you introduced the bill? Did they really understand the Constitution? Did they really understand that most of what goes on in Washington, D.C. is frankly unconstitutional?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, coming back in the legislature after about, I guess it was, 8 years, when I left before, during the controversy of the Oklahoma City bombing, I'm pleasantly surprised that it's much more conservative in Oklahoma, and meaning traditional conservatism, but that happens to mean that it's closer to being a constitutional, having more constitutionalists in the legislature, or people at least have some understanding of the Constitution and this constitutional republic. And the since I had left, the Republicans took over the House, and that was really the main reason that convinced me to go ahead and run again, because we would be in the majority. Well, that was in 06, now in 08, just run one re-election again, and in Oklahoma we took over the Senate for the very first time in history, and for the very first time we have both the House and the Senate, and so there's an excellent chance of getting it passed in both bodies. Last year it passed the House 92-5.
All right, fine. Now, what about the governor? Will he go along with that?
Well, we've written the bill in a way where it's a resolution, a joint resolution, and the governor, it doesn't require the governor's signature, so I don't know if he'd go along with it or not, but we're just not going to, we're going to bypass him and act like he doesn't exist. He's a Democrat. He's a very liberal Democrat who came out strongly for Obama. And, you know, the state of Oklahoma is one of only two states that voted overwhelmingly for McCain and against Obama, which, you know, this state was not strong behind McCain, but when it got down to two choices, this state, you know, rejected Obama is what they did. They didn't vote for McCain. They rejected Obama.
Well, it was a pretty poor choice that we had, a choice between Obama and McCain. It was a choice being shot or being hung, and I don't really like either one. But I'm certainly glad that there are a lot of good conservative people who still value their freedom back there in Oklahoma. And is there, do you have good newspapers? Do you have good television? Why do you think the people there in Oklahoma are really suddenly support our constitutional form of government, where most other places in the country they didn't even know what the Constitution says?
Well, that's a really good question. There's been a lot of discussion about that the last 2 years or so, and I don't know if there's a real clear definitive answer, but I really do think the people of Oklahoma have a better understanding of this form of government and the roots of our
hold that there right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Radio this evening is Representative Charles Key, a member of the House of Representatives of the Oklahoma legislature. And he was just pointing out that Oklahoma is one of two states that roundly defeated Obama. The people there didn't like necessarily McCain, but the choice between McCain and Obama, a choice between being shot and being hung, they supported McCain overwhelmingly over Obama, realizing, of course, what a disaster his administration was going to be. And then I asked Representative Key, why was it that the people there in Oklahoma, in contrast to most places all across the country, are really adhering to these traditional values, American values, that at one time most people embraced, and that was support of the Constitution, insisting on the fact that the federal government abide by the law of this land, which is the Constitution. But of course, and Charles, you were saying a lot of people have been asking that same question. Why is Oklahoma different than other areas? Do you have better television? Do you have better newspapers? Or is it have a better educational system? Why do the people of Oklahoma hold to the values of fear of government and realizing that limited government and liberty are synonymous?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I would say probably values that rely on the individual, self-government, self-reliance, as opposed to relying on government, and higher taxes and welfare and things like that. I would also say, faith has a lot to do with it, religious beliefs. But also, I think Oklahoma's had a history over its 100 years of existence of having a strong populist streak. And so I think there's just a self-reliance and a concept of depending on self and family instead of depending on government. And so I think that kind of has stuck with the people of Oklahoma and helps us to have a concept that we don't need government to take care of us. We can take care of ourselves and rely on ourselves.
Well, of course, the trouble is most of the problems we have in the, you know, in America today all can be traced directly back to the government. And I think Ronald Reagan said it best when he said, you know, there's no problem facing America today that a new government policy won't make worse. Now, of course, Ronald Reagan gave us more government, higher taxes. Oh, most people don't know he gave us the largest tax increase ever recorded in the history of our nation up to that time. He gave us the largest federal deficits, but you see, since the media's controlled and he had invited the members of the Trilateral Commission into the White House, you know, to celebrate, you know, their takeover of our government. Maybe they didn't celebrate. All I know is that he ran against the Trilateral Commission, you know, that controlled the Carter administration. Then, according to David Rockefeller in his memoirs, Ronald Reagan bought the members of the Trilateral Commission to the White House for a nice, cozy meeting. And, of course, by so doing, in my estimation, betrayed the very values, of course, that he had run on. He surrounded himself by trilateralists. Caspar Weinberger, one of his closest advisors, his vice president, all came from the Trilateral Commission, and of course they directed the policies of the Reagan administration. But anyway, there in Oklahoma, there's still people who hold to traditional values. So I'm really excited that you've got this resolution. Are you going to bring it back again? Got through last time. Hopefully it'll get through the Senate again this time. And what do you hope to accomplish, though, with a resolution saying we got to get back to the 10th Amendment of the Constitution? What will happen? Will it simply be a nice little paper, or will it have any legal binding capacity? Will it in any way influence the policies of your state or of our nation?
Well, you know, another thing that I think is important is that other states now are going to file this in their states this year, and which is, you know, most states are starting their legislative sessions right now or well within the next 30 days. And so we're going to see some other states also file this and hopefully pass it. But back directly to your question, if we look at the history of this country, number one, we didn't just decide to have a revolution one day and we went to arms and went to war with Britain. We went through years, actually two or three decades, pleading with, petitioning the British government to correct the problems that the colonies kept bringing before them. They brought these problems before the king, they brought them before the parliament, and they continued to bring them over and over again. In other words, they went through the, quote, proper channels of government, doing the right kinds of things that you do legally and politically to bring grievances before a government or an authority to try to correct those things. And ultimately, it was the British government that fired the first shot and started the war. One could make an argument that, you know, we pushed the issue, but they're the ones that actually fired the first shots. Well, likewise, today, in our current times, when you have a grievance or an issue with another party or another entity, you don't just go take physical action. You take some steps first. One is giving notice. Another one is then maybe filing some type of an action in a court or some other type of political body, and then take some additional steps to try to correct that. This 10th Amendment resolution is like that. It's a first step in saying, in stating what the problem is and stating what the case is, and giving notice to the federal government that they are the ones that are in violation of the law, the lawbreakers, just like you said a minute ago, and that they need to get back in their proper place, their proper role. And if they don't, it's implied that we will do it for them. We will take additional steps. And I've been talking to other legislators about the steps that we as legislators and state legislatures can take to then take some stronger action to cause them to get back in their proper place as our agents. They act as if we belong to them, but they actually belong to us.
Well, certainly the worst thing we ever did was to pass the 17th Amendment, which, of course, took the Senate. The senators were originally, you know, appointed by the state legislatures to represent the states, rather than, of course, the public vote, which was simply a step along the way towards the centralization of power in Washington, D.C., and bringing the federal government into the control of the very way of wealthy, who then could finance the Senate elections and depend upon the senators to carry out their wishes rather than the wishes of the state and the people. So, certainly, is there a growing awareness in state legislatures across America of the dangers of the centralization of power in Washington, D.C., and the fact that we are moving away from freedom towards a tyrannical system of government in the name of course, fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden, or in the name of correcting the financial mess we're in today, created by the people in the federal government intentionally, in my estimation? I mean, do people in the states, are they beginning to wake up and realize that the problem cannot be solved by government? The problem is the government?
I believe there is. I know there is in many states. I've been talking to other legislators, and you know, we'll see just how much this spreads throughout the country. But I know for a fact that there is a lot of other states. And I tell you, and here's another example and another proof that that is the case. The Real ID Act of 2005, the effort by the federal government to force all the states to have a national and a global ID that everyone has to carry. That has a lot of personal information, has biometric information, your fingerprint, your facial biometric scan of your face, your eye, your, you know, other aspects of your body, and personal information to eventually be kept on this ID card. That bill was passed and has been soundly rejected by a clear majority of the states. Last count that I have, there's at least 40 states that have either passed, filed and passed legislation, or at least filed legislation saying they will not comply with the Real ID Act.
Well, because the federal government's going to say, well, we're going to cut off your money, you know. You've got to do what we want because we're in charge here. What right do you people in the states have to proclaim your sovereignty or the sovereignty of our people? I mean, the people in the federal government want everybody tagged. They want dossiers on everybody. They want everybody numbered. They want, because it all has to do with control. So I'm really pleased that many of the states have taken a stand against them. And yet, of course, the states, the federal government then will set out to punish states and punish legislators and anybody who really stands up against them. And some of them are like, for instance, certainly Eliot Spitzer, the governor of the state of New York, when he brought out the criminal activity of the Bush administration in precipitating this financial meltdown we've had as far as housing. Why, they had his telephone tapped. They found out he was conforting with a prostitute. They leaked the story illegally, and then, of course, they destroyed his career. I would think that a lot of legislators would be afraid to take a stand against the government because they can target, you know, them. They can come up with false charges, as they did with Congressman Hansen, and put him in prison for 10 years, tortured him, and then eventually said, oh, gee, shucks, George, we're just so sorry. We had no right to do it. And they've done the same thing with other congressmen, and many strange things have happened. Are they, the state legislatures, concerned about the fact that many times the federal government misuses its power and goes after and targets people who take a stand against them?
Well, no question about it. There's a lot of people that are concerned about that. That's why they remain silent. But there are even the ones that stand up and are doing something. Everybody's concerned about that possibility. But you know, back to the Real ID, you've got over 40 states. Well, the interesting thing about all of this is that, you know, you've got a small number of people bringing into submission a nation of over 300 million. So the point is we far outnumber them. There's a lot of states. I'm real proud that Oklahoma is one of the first states to say we will not comply with the Real ID Act.
Well, I'm proud of Oklahoma.
But then here's what else has happened. You've got many other states like Montana, South Carolina, New Hampshire, Maine, and many others now that have come on board and take the same strong stand that we did. You know, they're calling the Democratic governor of Montana, his last name is Schweitzer. He's got a nickname, Stonewall Schweitzer, because he's come out many times and said, to the federal government. I don't care what you say.
Hold on, Charles will be right back. You go right ahead. You're talking about the Stonewall there in Montana?
Yeah, well, are we off the air now?
No, no, you go right ahead.
Well, I was just saying that...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Of that fellow, I don't know if you ever remember what he looks like. He looks like he weighs about 95 pounds. He got prominent cheekbones, as skinny as a rail. Michael Chertoff, the head of the Office of Homeland Security, threatened that any governor, any state that refused to go along with his dictates, that people couldn't get into federal office buildings, they couldn't fly on airplanes. He was really going to make their life miserable. They were going to lose all the rights of American citizens. And the governor of Montana said, I don't care what you say, we're not going to go along with you. And when faced with a revolt on the part of governors across America, four or five of them, Chernoff, backed right on down. He's not a courageous man. He's a bully. And when he found he couldn't bully the states, he did back down. And of course, what I think Charles Key's point is that if we're going to take America back, we're going to have to do it at the state and the local level. And the good thing that's happening, despite the terrible tragedy of the unfolding economic crisis, is that people are beginning to listen and beginning to consider what's really important, trying to figure out how we got into the mess we are today, and then, of course, realizing that it's really a byproduct of the federal government. They are not trying to solve it, and hopefully more and more people at the local level will support people who will work, and starting at the state level, why we can begin to take America back. Would that be more or less the way you feel about it, Charles?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, that's exactly what we need to do. That's the best solution. And I think we can do that. I think we can accomplish that.
And I think it's really important that you are certainly, in touch with an awful lot of other legislators across the country who feel the same way. Your voice getting a little muffled. Are you on a cell phone?
Yes, I am.
Do you have access to a hard line there by any chance?
I apologize, but I don't. We've just come back from, on our way back from two basketball games outside of Oklahoma City, and this is the only line that I have right now.
All right, fine. Well, then we'll just put up with that. Our telephone number here at Radio Liberty is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you'd like, have a question for Representative Charles Key. I think this is really such an important issue because Charles then is in a position to make a difference. He has people there in the state legislature in the great state of Oklahoma who are certainly going along with his 10th Amendment resolution, and it is being introduced in other states. Do we have any idea how many other states are introducing these 10th Amendment resolutions to say, the federal government's going to have to abide by the laws. This is the law of the land you are sworn to uphold, and you can't get away with violating the law any more than we can? How many other states are thinking about doing it?
Well, I've been busy enough that I can't really monitor the other states, but I do know this. I know State Representative Sam Rohr of Pennsylvania will be introducing a 10th Amendment resolution in his state, and I'll mention two or three, four other states that I think will. I think there's going to be a legislator in Indiana. I believe there might be one in Missouri. Possibly one in Idaho, and possibly another one in Washington State. And then I know there is probably about a dozen other states that there's been inquiries over the last 6 months, and I just haven't been able to communicate with them recently to know if they're going to follow through and file legislation.
Well, I certainly hope they will. Now, you've got an excellent United States senator from your state, don't you? He's the junior senator. What's his name, do you call?
Tom Coburn.
Tom Coburn, and he certainly is one of the... He's a physician, and actually, of course, he was encouraged to run for the Senate. He didn't, and of course, all the opposition in the world was thrown against him, and he won overwhelmingly there in Oklahoma, and he's a real honest-to-goodness, God-fearing conservative, isn't he?
Yes, he is. I would say this, that there's some people that are disappointed that he voted for the bailout this past fall.
Well, I'm in too, but I think a lot of people were stampeded into that without really thinking of the implications for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was uncharacteristic for him, but other than that, there's hardly any blemish on his record. He's been a staunch constitutionalist and a strong conservative.
Well, I think, of course, they were really, of course, threatening people. They're going to be martial law in the country. The whole of the sky's going to fall. There's certainly we're going to lose our country. If you don't vote for Mr. Paulson the $700 billion so he can buy out the troubled assets, the troubled asset relief program. That was it all about. He's going to buy up, and, of course, from a purely monetary point of view, that would have been a logical thing to do. The only thing is that in the legislation there was no requirement what Mr. Paulson would do with the money, and he could not be, of course, prosecuted for misspending it. So he changed his mind once he got bony little fingers on those, or long fingers on those $700 billion, and gave it to his friends on Wall Street. Aw, shucks. Could you imagine he would lie to the American people and to Congress? And he did.
Well, you know...
Hold just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Representative Charles Key. Go right ahead, Charles. The computer sort of directs the program. I just sort of sit here and let it run things for me. You go right ahead.
Well, one of the other things about the bailout is that, as I'm sure you cover in your show extensively, is when you don't know where a lot of that money's going, we can't necessarily trust that it's going for the things that it was intended to go for.
Well,
it could be going to somebody's bank account, some Swiss bank account or something else like that. And we've seen so much of that happen and take place where the monies have been diverted somewhere to somebody's huge overblown salary or something else, I would believe anything. I don't trust any of it.
And I think, of course, you're absolutely right. Basically, of course, the House Oversight Committee, the House of Representatives appointed an oversight committee, and their job was to try to figure out what was going on, with money. I mean, here you're talking about $700 billion, and of course, $350 billion of it's already been spent. And, then there's another $2 trillion that's been put out there, and the House Oversight Committee cannot find out where the money's gone. I personally think we are witnessing the greatest transfer of wealth ever transferred from the middle class in a wealthy country to the very, very wealthy in a wealthy country. And I really share your concern. Why are they afraid to let the American people know what's happened to $2 trillion? And then, of course, most of the money from the TARP, most of the $350 billion for the first half of TARP. And I think that we have to be suspicious of what's going on.
Well, I strongly suspect there's criminal activity here. And not only that, but, there is unconstitutional activity going on. And so if the lie is shown on all of this, and people can see what's really going on, and we've already had a lot of it revealed, then we'll see how corrupt the government really is. Not that every single person, elected or not elected, is corrupt, but they'll see how corrupt it's become, and they fear that there'll be a strong reaction against that, and that maybe even, legal charges might be brought against people, or at least they'll lose their positions in the legislature, whatever position they may hold.
Well, I certainly think that a lot of them deserve to lose their positions.
Absolutely.
Well, our guest this evening is Representative Charles Key from the great state of Oklahoma, and we'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly the board's all lit up. We've got people from Illinois and Santa Cruz and across the country, and of course we're talking with Representative Charles Key from the great state of Oklahoma. We were just talking about what happened to all the money that has been appropriated to try to solve the financial problem. There is $2 trillion that has disappeared. Nobody knows where it is. Bloomberg and certainly the legislature, state, federal legislatures, try to find out what happened to the money, and nobody will tell them. Certainly the Congressional Oversight Committee trying to find out what happened to the first $350 billion of the TARP funds that have been spent, and nobody will tell them. And of course, the reports are all up there on the internet. You can read them. The first report of the committee, the second report of the committee came out on the 9th of January, just a couple of days ago, and they're saying, we can't find out what happened to the money. Now, why would the Federal Reserve System and the Treasury System, the Department of the Treasury, be concealing what happened to the money, unless, of course, they were afraid the public would learn the truth? And I think everybody should be concerned. I think we're witnessing the greatest transfer of wealth that has ever occurred. Well, Charles, before we go on, do you have a website or anything you'd like to get out before we start taking calls from across America?
Well, I do have a website. It's charleskey.com, and there is a limited amount of information on there, and also there is the ability to contact me by email. So know, that's something that someone could go to and find out how to reach me.
All right, fine. That's charleskey.com. And let's go to Dave, who's calling from Illinois. Hi, Dave. How you doing? Dave, are you there? Oh, we didn't get Dave up. Let's see if we got him. There we have him. Hi, Dave. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
A couple comments. First of all, I'm in Illinois, and last I heard, our governor was all for this thing. What's the latest on that, you know?
Yeah, I think you probably know a lot
more. Not our governor, our Secretary of State, a guy named Jesse White. He was all for this baloney.
You mean as far as the ID card?
Yeah,
the federal
he'd be
ID card?
Supporting it.
Well, I think you probably would know more about what's going on in Illinois than the Representative Key from Oklahoma.
Okay, I just let him have an idea.
All right, fine.
I've heard nothing lately about it. My comment is, guys, it's just getting so ridiculous. We don't have a government. We have a mafia in what? We have organized crime in Washington. It's a mafia. It's a federal mafia. And I'm just getting so fed up with it. And I hear, like this shirt off, well, I think it looks like Vladimir Lenin, that guy. I mean, he's acting like a dictator, and it's upside down, gentlemen. They don't represent us anymore. They're our rulers. They're being dictators. And, now we have, I think, a Marxist coming to the White House, Obama. And it's really scary that these people they're so arrogant they're drunk with power and arrogance.
But Dave, what are you doing in Illinois to try to counter what's going on?
Oh, I call my congressman all the time.
All right, fine. What about your state representative? And the thing is, if they're not doing the right thing, your state representative is doing the right thing, then all you need to do is start mounting a campaign to have them recalled, and they'll start to listen to what you have to say, because they'd have to counter that. You can pass out flyers at the grocery store. You can, start a telephone campaign. You can try to get others to help you. You're not helpless. The important thing is we put pressure on our state legislators and our federal legislators to get them to do what's right, and if they don't do it, the one thing that they fear most of all, that you'll remember in November and you'll vote them out of office. Charles, how would you respond to Dave?
I would ditto what you just said. You're exactly right. Go to your state representative and your state senator. I wouldn't say ignore or forget your federal legislators, but go to your state representatives and state senators. You can go see them face to face, and you can see them regularly. You can talk to them on the phone regularly, and let them know what you think and what's right, and question them and make them have to justify their oath to the Constitution, and then how they're voting, and what they're going to do about these federal laws. And if they give you a response, something along the lines that, well, gee, we can't do anything about it because we just have to go along with whatever the federal government is. Straighten them out real quick about that and tell them you're going to vote them out of office and get somebody else if they don't get their act together and start representing you, the people, and the Constitution.
And suggest they have a resolution in support of the 10th Amendment. And then you got to get people educated about our Constitution. You have to get them educated of the fact there's a little elite group up there in Washington, D.C., who control everything. If you haven't seen my December newsletter, you want to get it, because we tell you who these people are. There's only about 5,000 of them, but they control our entire government and a nation of over 300 million people. Dave, you have anything else to say before we let you go?
Yeah, well, quick comment here. Well, obviously, guys, I think you agree with me. What's happening over the past 200 years is things have been turned upside down, obviously. The states are no longer the power Washington is. That's happened over a period of time, but somehow we have to get Washington to realize that they are there. They are our employees, not the way around. We're over them. Mm-hmm. And Representative Keyes, I respect you tremendously because you're trying to get things right. So
God
keep up the work.
Dave, what you've got to do is start getting those people educated with flyers, just with a one-page synopsis of what's going on, and try to get them to read my book and understand the spiritual nature of the forces that are energizing the wicked people who are behind what's going on. Thanks so much.
Talk to you all the time about it.
God bless. And let's go to Ray calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. A question, actually. Kind of was it a question for Charles. Don't you think that we're probably just moving into a cashless society, a situation where, they could implement some kind of national credit or something like that, where people wouldn't be able to buy or sell without the card? Because if they did away with cash, of course, then everybody would have to have a card. So they're going to try to make it cash and more scarce.
Yes, I think you're exactly right. That's exactly what many are wanting to accomplish, and they're moving to try to get that done.
Yeah.
Well, I think
that's why we have to oppose things like the Real ID. That's why we have to support the Constitution in the various aspects of it that speak to money and monetary policy, because the Constitution is very specific about the type of money that we have in this country. It's gold or silver. We haven't had that for a long time. It doesn't give you any authority to create a central bank like the Federal Reserve Bank. That's unconstitutional.
You know, I've heard that, for instance, Senator Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and other people, as well as other prominent people in government, were on board with this RFI chip so that they could use the excuse that people, oh, we have to have your medical records, you know, so then they'll get everybody on board, you know, onto this RFI chip.
Well, yeah. I think we're very, what we have to do is point out it's unconstitutional. You either believe in the Constitution, you don't. You can always justify ever more power. You can always justify a dictatorship in the name of helping the people. But it's unconstitutional, and they've sworn to uphold the Constitution. Did they believe in their oath, or were they lying when they took the oath? And we need to keep pounding away at that. We have a Constitution. It's the law of the land, and there really are people like the Clintons who've gotten, I think, $110 million in return, a reward for their services, well-rendered. Bill Clinton just recently got $500,000 for a speech, and he didn't even give the speech. I mean, that is, of course, a payment for services rendered. And I think when people begin to understand that, why they can begin to understand what's going on, they talk about their concern about the poor folks, but they're not poor at all. Anyway, Ray, thanks so much for calling, and please help us get the word out. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And let's go to Steve from Illinois. Steve, do you have a question for our guest?
Well, good evening. Yes, Charles, you know, I won't get in all the variables and that is going on, but I know what's going on in this country, and I think we're at such a time that this is an emergency, and we got to fight back against these people immediately, if not sooner, with at least a general strike with these people. There's not time for voting and all this and that. They run the voting machines, this, that, and the other. I hate to have to see civil disrest, but I mean, when they take your lifeblood away, money, what else is left?
All right, fine. Well, let's get to Representative Key's response. You want a general strike out there. What do you think of Steve's suggestion, Charles?
Well, I don't know. It made me think of a couple of different things, but there's... Oh, you know, we're in very tough times, and we have to do the best. I tell you, here's what we're doing in Oklahoma. We've gotten very organized in Oklahoma. There's a number of groups that have come together, a lot of people, a lot of citizens that have come together. They've organized, and as we've looked at all the problems, the national problems, and how they affect us all over the country and us right here in Oklahoma and every state of the union, we finally decided and realized, you know, we can't fix New York, we can't fix California, we can't fix Illinois, but we can fix Oklahoma City, and we can fix the state of Oklahoma. So that's what we're concentrated on, is we're concentrating on fixing Oklahoma. We're concentrating on getting people that understand and believe in the Constitution and will follow it elected to the state legislature in Oklahoma, and maybe to the city council, and maybe to the county government in Oklahoma. And if we can get people elected to the federal government to think the same way, we're fortunate in Oklahoma. We've got a lot of people like that already. We've got more over the last 5 and 10 years. But if we can get them in the federal government, that's fine. But we're going to start at the local, county, and state level, and we're going to take back Oklahoma. If every state or most of the states will do that, we'll fix this problem, and we can fix it very quickly. But we need to stop focusing on the big, huge, giant problem across the country, because none of us and no groups of us can really fix that, but we can fix what goes on right in our own backyard.
And I agree with you totally. I mean, I think that you have to recognize, Steve, that first of all, you're not going to be able to get a general strike. The media is controlled. They had over, I think, 20 or 30 demonstrations all in one day, all across America, to try to do away with the Federal Reserve System. It got the conspiracy of silence. They couldn't get people out because the information was suppressed by the media. And, of course, you could have, you know, five gays, you know, with a sign out there, five homosexuals with a sign, and it would get front page coverage all across America, and you could have literally thousands, of course, of conservatives out there demonstrating against the Federal Reserve. Not a word. What we need is education, and we got to start at local. It's got to go from local to the national. There's a slogan that the liberals have. It says, think globally, but act locally. And that's what we've got to do. And I think that what Charles Key is doing is important. What are you doing to try to influence the difference in your community?
Well, let me say, I agree with you. They are keeping this country fractionalized, where we can't get together. But I'm trying to shout from the mountaintops as much as I can. And, you know, let me leave you with this. Always, don't forget this. These people, this cabal, has not taken this money to give it back to us. And it's going to come down to where, you know, there's going to be a fight for our lives, our very lives, and that. So I figure sooner than better. And I understand it's hard to get people together. But, boy, something's got to get moving here because Rome's burning, friends.
Steve, it's going to take time. We're not going to get anything done in a hurry. We've got to just keep working at it as slow and steady. Remember, of course, it's the tortoise who wins, not the rabbit, okay? God bless.
Thank God for your show on that, though. I tell you that. That keeps me at least halfway.
Okay. And, Steve, please tell all the people out there in Illinois, get them listening to Radio Liberty.
I do.
Our audience is growing. I'm encouraged, and I hope you are, too. God bless. Yeah. Let's go to Russell calling from Albany, New York. Hi, Russell. Do you have a question for our guest?
I just have a statement about this. It's like, you know, I believe in the Constitution, that we need to stand up for our freedoms and everything. But we believe in God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit and everything like that. But like in the Book of Revelation, it says all these things are going to happen. Is the Book of Revelation just an idea of what's going to happen, or can we change that? Because this national ID card and everything is like the mark of the beast. Can we fight this?
I think we have to. I think you remember what happened in Nineveh? Do you remember the story of Nineveh? Remember, Jonah went to Nineveh. God was going to destroy Nineveh, but he said,
"So we can change it.
We can't change it.
Have to come true. Is that what you're saying?"
No, I'm saying that we could delay it, just as they delayed the destruction of Nineveh for 60 years. Our job is to do our best. It's in God's hands. How would you address what Russell is saying? Russell is saying, "Well, it's in the Bible. Things are going to get bad, so we shouldn't do anything." What do you say to that, Charles?
Well, Russell,
I'm not saying we shouldn't do anything, but it just seems like it's inevitable. I mean, if God told John to write the Bible...
Please, Russell, let Charles answer the question. Go ahead, Charles.
Russell, I can't state how strongly I feel about this. I think we Christians have made some big mistakes in assuming that we have been able to see that things going on in our time are those end-time prophecies that we read about in the Bible. And the fact is, we do not know that. We do not know it. Even Jesus himself said he does not know that day and time. And so it could be a trick of the devil himself, of Satan, that we've convinced ourselves, well, we're in the last days, we're in the end times, and there's nothing we can do about it. And the truth is, we don't know if we are, and I think that really is some level of violation of the will of God for us to do everything that we can while we're here on this earth, no matter what times we live in, no matter what we're faced with. And we don't know if these are the end times or not. They may be, they may not be. When Hitler was here, when Nazi Germany was on the rise, people thought that was the end times. And there's been many times in the history on this planet when people thought there were end times or something similar, and they were not. And so we just do not know when that is. And wouldn't it be a tragedy if we thought it was the end times and it wasn't, and we didn't do all we could do to stop it?
Or maybe God's got to come back 30 years after America's fallen. So, Russell, you got to sit down and just put your hands underneath your bottom and just sit there and do nothing? Or are you going to join us in this epic struggle for the survival of Christian civilization?
We can survive this.
What's that?
We can beat this. We can survive this.
We have to do the best we can. We have to realize it's a spiritual battle, but we've got to be involved. I'm called to be involved. I think Charles is called to be involved. I hope that you'll be involved in this as well. Certainly there are many, many things that I believe that we may well be moving towards the end times, but I don't know when it's going to come about, and I think that we are called by God to do our best and to oppose the evil which permeates every aspect of our society. Okay?
Thank you.
God bless. Okay, fine. Well, I've represented, I guess this evening is Representative Charles Key. And of course, really, of course, if you go and you read what happened in the, under Hitler's Germany, we have a wonderful book. It's called Hitler's Cross, written by Erwin Lutzer, who's the senior pastor at the Moody Bible Church in Chicago. And they were preaching Romans 13. They were preaching all of the things that we're hearing today in Hitler's Germany. And the ministers went right along with it. Oh, we got to support the government. We can't take a stand against the government. Romans 13. Read Romans 13. Well, read what it really says. The leaders of the government are to be subservient to God. Are our leaders subservient to God? Was George Bush really believe in the validity of the scriptures? He recently said he didn't. He said we all believe the same God. The Muslims believe in the same God, and the Hindus, and we all worship the same God. Well, that's not the God I worship. Well, Charles, we got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, I just would say that I appreciate your show and what you're doing. You know, back to what we were talking.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Of course, it's an expensive proposition, too, to actually maintain our network of over 60 outlets, and, of course, a lot of them are just half an hour a week. But at least we have certainly the opportunity to talk to people and to give them the truth, the story that they're never going to hear elsewhere. So if you agree with us and you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. And you can join the Radio Liberty family and get our tape of the four best tapes of the month and our monthly newsletter. You can subscribe to the newsletter there are lots of things that you can do to help. If you can't afford to do anything, then just tell people about our programs. Pass out our cards. Have a bumper sticker on the back of your car, which talks about, if you want the truth, news behind the news, listen to Radio Liberty. And, of course, we'll be glad to send those to you free of charge. Help us to get the information out. Only you can do it. I can tell you the audience is growing all the time, and we need your help to continue getting the information out. Now, of course, the center of what we talk about is the Brotherhood of Darkness, the book, the DVD, or the tape. You can watch the tape up on our website at RadioLiberty.com. Just scroll down to videos, and then scroll down the videos to the Brotherhood of Darkness. But the book gives you the background of what's going on, and, of course, gives you the sources of documentation. And then, of course, we hope that you want to get my talk on the forbidden secret, because there is a secret. It's been passed down for 5,000 years by the secret societies, and through the mystery religions, and through the Greek philosophers, and the Kabbalah, and then the Gnostics, and then the Knights Templar. Yes, the Knights Templar were an important part of this. And then, of course, through the Rosicrucians, through the Illuminati and the Masons, and then the Theosophists, and the certainly all these organizations are still here working. You can go up on the internet and pull down the Masonic websites, the Rosicrucian websites, the Gnostic websites, the Lucius Trust. It used to be the Lucifer Publishing House. These are not imaginary. They are really very real. And this movement is being financed by some of the wealthiest people in our country, who got their wealth because they made an agreement with the other god. And if you doubt this is true, you need to see the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. It talks about what's happened in the music industry, the background of Jimi Hendrix, where he got his talent, and where so many of the people who really had an impact on rock music got their fame and fortune, but so many of them have died very young and will pay an eternal price for what they've done, for the betrayal of the God of the Bible. And so that's they sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. We recommend, of course, that you get the DVD on Operation Monarch. That's the CIA mind control. If you want to know what happened to President Kennedy, we suggest you get the DVD on the assassination of President Kennedy that we carry, put out by our good friend Bob Fletcher. Got excellent DVDs on the secret movements that are going on today. Just call us at 1-800-544-8927. Get his list of his DVDs on what happened to Sonny Bono, certainly on weather control, on UFOs. Fascinating material. I disagree with Bob on the UFOs. I believe that they're not alien. I believe that they are from the other dimension, because I believe that we are involved in a spiritual battle. But doesn't detract at all. There's no question UFOs are real. And there was no question we're being lied to about it. The real thing is, of course, why is the government lying? And it's simply because they have been tapping into the supernatural. They have groups that tap into the supernatural. And, of course, have been able to acquire some of these supernatural power that is really out there, that can be utilized to transform the world. So again, our number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, or 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'll be back in just a moment for the next hour. But please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our continued provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Donald McElveny. And this is not the one who puts out the newsletter on gold and silver, but another Donald McElveny, who's involved in missionary work throughout the country and throughout the world, and really trying to bring the Word of God to underdeveloped people and to people in other nations. Certainly, we've talked to him in the past about what was going on in Burma, the terrible tragedy that's unfolding there, but Don's got to tell us what's really happening across the world with the missions that are out there. Donald, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, Dr. Stan, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here with you again.
Well, why don't you tell us, you know, what your organization is doing and what impact it's having and how it's helping this effort to disseminate the Word of God.
Well, our ministry is Mission Barnabas, and it's incorporated in Florida. It's a nonprofit. And the platform was created to be a tool to minister to and encourage missionaries who are serving overseas and, you know, away from home in a different cross-cultural setting, and to be able to remind the church at home that the harvest is ripe and there's a labor shortage. Remember that Jesus said, I believe it's in Matthew chapter 9, you know, he'd spent the day, you know, cleansing lepers and healing people and doing all these wonderful things to bring his Father glory. And at the end of the day, he just was with his disciples, and he said, behold the multitude. They're wandering, you know, in spiritual darkness like sheep without a shepherd. And then Jesus turned to his disciples and said, I want you to do one thing. Ask the Lord of the harvest to raise up laborers.
Well, Donald, I'm going to have to interrupt you. I have a terrible, terrible confession to make. We have a commentator, one of our people over there in Israel, is right on sort of the front lines of the battle that's going on there. And I'm going to have to reschedule this.
Oh, please, go ahead and take his call.
Wait, beg pardon?
Oh, please, take his call.
All right, fine. So
Israel's the front line of the spiritual war.
I know it is.
Praise the Lord.
I promise to call you tomorrow morning. We'll get this thing rescheduled.
Oh, God bless you. Thank you so much.
All right, God bless, and thanks so much. And right now, of course, we're going to be going to, hopefully, to Cheryl Hancock over there in Israel. And I don't know how it was that we missed a call with her, but we're going to be calling her right now and try to find out what is really going on over in Israel, because these are exciting times, and certainly we want to be on the front lines of what's going on over there. So basically, we thought that Cheryl Hancock would be with us tomorrow evening. We'll probably get a Donald back again. Anyway, we'll try to get Donald on tomorrow, but we're going to go to Cheryl Hancock. Cheryl lives, of course, in Jerusalem. She's been down in the southern parts of Israel, which are under attack there. What most people don't understand is that in Israel today, of course, there is a large Arab population there, Israeli Arabs, but so many of them, of course, are not, of course, in tune with the Israeli government, and they really want to destroy the nation, their own nation, and when they do, of course, why, they're going to find themselves in an even far worse situation than they are today. Cheryl, thank you so very much for being with us.
No, hello, Stan. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Well, why don't you just go ahead and bring us up to date with what's going on over there in Israel.
Okay, well, there's a lot going on, and to start with, they have been sending reserve troops in now. They've called up a lot of reserves, thousands of them. There's, of course, the ground operation is continuing in Gaza now. They're going further in. They're in what they call Phase 3. Paratroopers are going in. One was lightly wounded yesterday. They hit over 60 targets last night alone. They hit over 100 targets yesterday. Now, when I talk targets, I mean missile launchers, tunnels that they have dug to Egypt.
Hold that thought. No, go right ahead now, Cheryl. Go right ahead.
Okay, and so what the word is, when I talk with the IDF spokesman, he said that they are going to go and finish the job. as much as they possibly can. I'm trying not to get into any international pressure at this point. There's even pressure from some of the government that's getting a little nervous. They want a ceasefire with Hamas is calling for a ceasefire. And Egypt is calling for a one-year ceasefire, which they call a hudna in Arabic. And a hudna is a time for them to regroup, rearm, and start over again. And I'm sorry to put it that way, but that's exactly what happens every time there's a ceasefire or hudna.
Well, of course, you know, they had a ceasefire, you know, for quite some time. But even when they had the ceasefire, why, of course, the Hamas was still lobbing missiles and mortars into the southern part of Israel. So the ceasefire was only on the part of the Israelis. Hamas has certainly never ever stopped lobbing missiles. It's only when the so-called ceasefire ended that they started increasing their missile attack. And they knew very well this was going to bring, you know, retaliation, and an awful lot of Palestinians were going to get killed. But the Hamas doesn't seem to be worried about all the Palestinians that are getting killed. They seem to be wanting to create an international incident. Does that what it appears to be to you?
Yeah, it does. I mean, for the 8 years you're talking about that there was a ceasefire, the rockets have been coming in and killing civilians in the southern part of Israel. I mean, the children are in such shock down there. A lot of them can't go to school. They shake uncontrollably. A lot of them wet their pants. They can't. One kid I talked to for 8 years, he's been going through this. He was 10 years old when it started. He's 18 years old now. And so people did not see during those 8 years all the problems that Israel was going through, but Israel was very patient. And so this is the time for them to go in and do something about it to stop it. And yes, they are trying to cause an international incident and show different things of what they need when this is something that just shouldn't go on and cannot go on any longer.
All right, certainly this is something that we're very, very concerned about and share your concern about the fate of Israel. Now, what is happening as far as the Israeli Arabs there? My understanding is many of them are demonstrating against the Israeli government and certainly support the Palestinian position rather than the Israeli position. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. As a matter of fact, you know, the Palestinian people, they voted for Hamas to go into government. And Hamas has taken over the Gaza Strip, as everyone knows. But they are not ruling in the West Bank areas like Samaria, Bethlehem, Jericho, all these other places. But there are Hamas cells and there are Hamas activists that will side for Hamas. They like Hamas. And so they are beginning. They have been attacking Israeli civilians and soldiers.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Cheryl. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Christian, Cheryl was simply pointing out that the southern part of Israel has been under attack for many years, even though there was a ceasefire there, why Hamas was lobbing in missiles and mortars and other things attacking Israel, and Israel, since there was a ceasefire, did not retaliate. Well, then, of course, when the ceasefire ended here about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and, of course, Hamas increased their missile barrages, certainly of the southern part of Israel, Israel then retaliated, and immediately, of course, they came under attack. Oh, my goodness, the terrible Israelis are killing Palestinian civilians, and they are. This is the tragedy, but Hamas knows that and is using the Palestinian civilians there, holding them hostage, and they're going to get slaughtered because Hamas wants this incident. Now, Sarah was just talking about the Hamas cells that certainly live in the West Bank, and about the Israeli Arabs, of course, many of them are sympathetic with Hamas. I mean, here they're citizens of Israel, but they hate Israel. So, really, what's going on over there as far as is Israel? What about the attacks on Israeli civilians, about the Israeli military within Israel itself? What's going on?
Yeah, I have to tell you, I was living in East Jerusalem for a while, which is actually just Arabs, Israeli Arabs. And most of them, where I lived, were Muslim, religious Muslims. And they didn't like me. I had a hard time living there. I was under attack for quite a while there. And so I got out of the neighborhood. I lived there for 2 months. It was enough for me. Now, what's going on here is that even in Israel proper, as you said, they are Israeli citizens. They have the right to work, to vote, you know, the whole bit. But what's going on is they're coming against Israel because they are siding with Hamas. And they are what we call pro-Palestinian, and most of the Arabs here are pro-Palestinian. But these ones that are attacking, and there was an incident yesterday where they were throwing rocks at cars. Now, I was driving down the street, and I had to change my route because I didn't want the rocks coming at my car. They could kill you, you know, coming through the windshield. one of the people shot. You know, a lot of Israelis carry guns here. And so they shot in the air trying to get rid of the Palestinians, you know, from throwing the rocks at the car, and a Palestinian got shot. And so it's a big deal in the news now, but they don't talk about when these attacks happened. They're walking down the street. The Israeli Arabs are walking down the street stabbing, and they stabbed an 86-year-old man. They stabbed a little boy. They are running their cars into people. They are attacking the soldiers. Where I live, they're attacking the soldiers. And it's not safe to go into my old neighborhood right now.
Well, now, where are you living? You moved out of East Jerusalem. Where are you living now?
Right now, I'm in a very nice place. It's called Har El. It's the Mountain of God, right on the west side of Jerusalem.
All right. All right, fine. So at least it's a little safer there than over on the east side then.
Yes, much safer.
All right, fine. Now, what is the attitude of the Israeli people? I mean, certainly they've been under attack, you know, under the threat of attack, under the threat of extermination for the better part of 50 years. Are they wearing down the determination of the Israeli people? Are the Israeli people behind the attack on Gaza and the effort to get rid of Hamas once and for all?
Yeah, the majority of the people are for the operation in Gaza. They want them to stop the attacks, like you said, once and for all. They don't want their children to grow up with this. They don't want the attacks to continue. There's a very small handful that's against it, but most of them are for it. And these people, as you said, have been under fire for a long time, and they just want it to quit. It's time for it to end, and they're trying to negotiate, but there have been no negotiations that Hamas will accept. Hamas's goal is not to live side by side with Israel. They have a goal that they do not want Israel in this land. They call them occupiers, Israeli occupiers. They don't believe Israel is here legally in this land, and they say they need to get rid of them. I do have to bring up one incident that happened with the humanitarian aid that's been going into Israel, or into Gaza. About 90 trucks a day go in there to take food and clothing and medicine and ambulances. They searched one of the trucks. I talked to the IDF spokesman. He told me this right as it was happening. They searched the truck, and there were uniforms, winter uniforms for Hamas in that truck. So not only humanitarian aid is going in, Israel stops the war. They cease fire for 3 hours each day so that the humanitarian aid can go in, but now they found out there's more than humanitarian aid going in.
Well, now, who is actually providing this? Is this Arab groups? Is this international aid that's going in? And are they taking in guns and weapons as well, guns and ammunition as well? Do we know?
It is international, and some of the trucks come from Turkey. Some come from different Arab nations. One's coming in from France today. Different nations send things in. Now, to search 90 trucks, and you have 3 hours to get all of this aid in, they weren't searching all that great, I guess. And when I asked the spokesman, I said, well, where did this truck originate from? He said, you know, we really need to look into that, because whatever country is sending this in obviously is sending other things in besides aid, and they need to be stopped. Hamas will use not only their uniforms that they wear, like the ones that were sending in by the truck, but they're also using civilian clothing. They're using IDF clothing. They're looking like Israeli soldiers now. This is a report that came out last night. They're dressing up like IDF, and so when these little soldiers, they're, you know, between 18 and 20 years old, go in there, every boy and girl has to join the army when they become 18. Boys for 3 years, girls for 2 years. And so this is not a draft situation. This is, you know, a mandatory thing. They go in there, and they're shooting and fighting against an enemy that sometimes they don't recognize because they're in civilian clothing or they're in IDF uniforms. And they are trying to just confuse IDF soldiers, and they want to kidnap more soldiers and have something to work with in their negotiations.
Well, because what, of course, does it look like there's going to be any sort of a ceasefire and negotiations? I mean, what about the thought that they're going to actually have a ceasefire, and then they're going to bring United Nations or perhaps Eastern European troops and, pardon me, I said European military troops and station them there? Certainly there's been a lot to talk about the EU military, European Union military, becoming occupiers. Certainly, I think they are UN troops up there in Lebanon, aren't there, that are keeping the peace there?
Yeah, that's right. They are controlling the borders there, but the problem with the UN troops is they're allowing weapons from Syria to get to Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, and they just turn their eyes off on this. And so Hezbollah is more armed than they were a couple years ago during the Lebanon war with Israel. And so if that situation happens, if UN peacekeepers are there at the border. That's their job, is to keep the peace. They just allow things to happen that shouldn't be happening. They don't want conflict. They don't want to start firing or being fired on. The EU, I heard, has turned down the job of being the peacekeepers there on the border. So they're trying to figure out who would be the peacekeepers. And one of the requests that came today was that Turkey would be the soldiers that would be keeping the peace on the border. So then you would have Turkey, Egypt, and Hamas there at the border of Israel.
Well, now, what about the threat of Hezbollah attacking from the north, or Syria attacking from the east? Certainly, this has been my fear, that it was that Israel started getting attacked from the north and from the east. Why, of course, they would be pretty hard put to defend themselves, wouldn't they?
Well, Israel sent troops up to the northern border a week or so ago because they knew the threats that were coming from Nasrallah, who is, the leader of Hezbollah. Now, he is threatening that if Israel does go in and does anything in Lebanon, that it would be much worse than 2 years ago. Now, these threats are just, the way they threaten during war. But Israel is ready. They are on the northern border. Yes, a rocket came through and hit the town of Nahariya and hit an old folks' home there and just wounded people and put people into shock. Now, Hezbollah said it didn't come from them. It just came from Palestinians that are on the southern border. Then an incident from Syria happened just last week, and that was that soldiers were being fired at from Syria. Again, the Syria said that they weren't behind it, but Palestinians from Syria. Yesterday, or the day before yesterday, or the night before last, there was shooting from Jordan at Israeli soldiers on the border of Israel and Jordan, and this was near Eilat, the southern part of Israel. And again, Jordan said, this is not Jordan, this is Palestinians that are in Jordan. So the Palestinians are rising up everywhere. I think they're just, flexing their muscles and saying, we're here. So Israel has her hands full right now. She's surrounded by enemies.
What's the morale of the Israeli people? I mean, are they depressed? Are they really saying, this is it, we're going to finish this thing up once and for all so we can live in peace? What's the attitude that, the general Israeli citizen?
Generally, everyone I've talked to said they, kol hakavod, which means good, go in there and get this job done, Israel. Thank you for standing up for the people here of Israel. And they are behind the soldiers 100%. I talked to people who had their houses bombed in Sderot. I go down by the front line and talk to the people and see how they're feeling. And I said, what do you think? I mean, you were in your house. No one got killed, thank God. Some people did get hurt at this one particular house that I went to. And they said, we are so glad that Israel went in and did something, because we never know at 2 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning for the past 8 years if we have to run to a bomb shelter. And what if you can't get to one?
Sderot? Is that how you pronounce it?
Sderot.
Sderot. It's a town in southern Israel. It's, maybe about 20 miles or so from the border.
No, it's 1 mile.
1 mile from the border. Okay, so it's close to the border, and it's been under really constant siege for a number of years. This is the tragedy. And now, of course, they're using long-range missiles and hitting, I think, Israel's second or third largest city. What's the name of that one?
They're hitting in Ashkelon and Beersheba, and I went into Ashkelon a week ago. I was there, 2 weeks ago, after this conflict started. And I was in my car. It's the first experience I had with the sirens going off. It's called the red alert. And when that red alert siren goes off, you better make a run for it. You've got, in Ashkelon, you have 30 seconds to make it to shelter. In Sderot, because you're so close to the border, you have 15 seconds. So you look for your nearest shelter and you run. You leave your car. I had to leave my car in the middle of the road. It was very difficult to get out of my car. I wasn't used to this. And you just run. And then you wait for the bomb to hit. You wait a couple more seconds to see if there's a second bomb, and then there's an all clear, and you go about your business. But the streets are pretty much empty down south because these rockets have been coming in just tremendously, like never before.
Well, that's all. We're going to be back here. This is what you're not hearing, of course, in the United States, is that Israel has been under rocket attack for many years, but the liberal media won't tell you that. Well, Cheryl, you certainly, as far as the war is concerned, why? Because
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Involved, at least tacitly involved, in allowing them to build 300 tunnels from Egypt on up into Gaza so to supply the Hamas with the weapons that they're using to kill Israelis. So, I mean, where does Egypt really stand in this?
Well, Egypt has to be careful where they stand because they are an Arab nation and they have to get along with their Arab neighbors, but they have to also, they're supposed to be an ally of America and of Israel. So they're supposed to be help negotiating, but I don't know if I just said it, but Egypt wants a one-year ceasefire, a hubna, for Hamas, which is a time of re-equipping. Now, Egypt says they will help stop the Hamas war. They have talked to Hamas and told them this was not a wise thing to do, and it wouldn't lead anywhere, but Hamas didn't listen to Egypt at that point. So there has been some conflict between the two countries. Yet Egypt is taking in patients from wounded from Hamas, and the tunnels are still open on the Egyptian side. Whether that has anything to do with the government or it has just different different groups, we don't know. But the spokesman told me that what they're going to do is they're going to make Hamas ineffective as far as making any kind of bombs or rockets. They're going to close off every tunnel so they cannot have anything from the outside coming in like that. And then we're going to hear about all the humanitarian aid and the blockade of Gaza if Israel does this. So that's a very touchy situation also.
All right, fine. Well, Chris, do you want to take some telephone calls?
Sure.
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you'd like to talk to Cheryl Hancock, who's right over there in the very belly of the beast, living now in West Jerusalem, but of course going down into the war zones in southern Israel, and of course talking to the people there, and certainly the people there have really, of course, in that region have been under attack for, you know, all many, many years, under constant threat of missile attack. And it would be sort of like if you lived down in Arizona or Mexico and you never knew when a missile was going to come in from Mexico, you'd live in constant fear. And this is the situation that these people have lived in southern Israel for the better part of a decade. It's important people understand this is the reason that Israel was literally forced to go into Gaza. It had no alternative, especially when the number of missiles being fired into Israel was raised to about 250 a day. And when you are under missile attack, you've got to defend your country. If you don't defend your country, you do not have a country. And very soon, of course, you'll lose the support of the people. Now, how much of what's going on today? Well, I don't want to put you into a difficult position, because I know that you're living over there certainly as a guest of the country, and there are all sorts of political machinations going on between various political parties, and certainly there are some people who say that a lot of the reason for the attack today was simply because there are elections coming up in Israel. Do you want to comment on that, or do you want to let that go by?
Well, I do want to say that the people of Sderot, the people of the South, and other people in Israel have been putting pressure on the government for the past 8 years as people were being killed and going into shock, and the whole life was upset down there. And Israel did nothing. They had patience for 8 years because they didn't want to go in and do this. Now, as you know, they sent the people that were living in the Gaza Strip. One of the negotiations they had is if all the people, all the Jewish people, moved out of the Gaza Strip, that there would be peace with the people of the Gaza Strip. So they moved all these people out. They don't have any homes. A lot of them still don't have homes to live in. And you know that these people are saying that they want to come back to the Gaza Strip when this is over. They're pressing on the government. But the point is that the people are, we're putting pressure on the government. Now, whether this has to do with elections or not, I don't know. But they are doing, Israel is doing the right thing. As you said, you can't sit by and let your people get be killed from another country and do nothing about it.
Well, Chrissy, for our listeners out there, you have to understand that there were Israeli settlers, and there were really many, many thousands of them who lived in the Gaza area. The area was peaceful. The Palestinians and the Israelis got along. A lot of the Palestinians worked for the Israelis. They actually had greenhouses there. They were one of the major producers of fruit food not only for Israel, but for all of Europe. And then, because of pressure from the United States, why Israel forced the Israeli settlers living in Gaza to leave so that they could turn that country over to the Hamas so that they could lob missiles into southern Israel. That does not make sense. Why would you force your people out, you know, of an area that was peaceful and leave it open so it could be taken over by terrorists who would then launch a missile attack that would justify you're going to war to take back the country that you've just given up? So much doesn't make sense. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course our guest is Cheryl Hancock, and she's calling us from West Jerusalem, as we're certainly, and of course it's very early in the morning there. What is it, about 7:30 now?
7:30.
I know, well, that's a terrible time, but I appreciate so much you getting up so that we could have you with us tonight just to bring us abreast of what's going on. And of course, if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. How is the overall economy there in Israel been doing? You know, so much of the rest of the world is having real economic problems. There's been contractions of the stock market and housing prices and people losing their jobs in many countries throughout the world. How is Israel doing before, of course, this recent conflict in Gaza? But what was the Israeli economy doing before that?
Well, Israel economy was doing okay. It started going down a little bit. But you know what? I haven't heard anything about the economy since this conflict happened. It's kind of dominating the news now because it's so important that this job gets done. And I think more people are concentrating on that. Now, if you want to talk about the Israel economy over in the West Bank, they are doing lousy, very bad. A lot of money is going into the West Bank. A lot of money went into Hamas. And as you were talking about the settlers that had to leave the Gaza Strip, and they had greenhouses, they had beautiful homes there. Instead of Hamas letting their people use that and using that export and building up the people, giving them jobs, they demolished all of it. And they are firing from that area into Israel farther. And not only do they have rockets that fire in farther, but they are in a closer point to throw the rockets in farther to fire them. So they are not doing anything as far as the economy for their people, and that's why so many people are poor. They use them as pawns. I know a family in particular. I talked to the boy myself, and he was supposed to join a militant group. And he said, Cheryl, what else am I supposed to do? I don't have a job. There's no place to work. These people will pay me. And so they almost put them under pressure to join the militant group, and so they're building their army, but they're not building any economy of infrastructure, jobs, nothing for the people. How will Hamas, how will Gaza really make it besides getting handouts from other countries?
And of course, that's a tragedy. And the Palestinians, ever since, you know, since the advent of Israel, the Palestinians have sat around and bemoaned rather than try to build up a productive capacity, a productive economy. They've sat around and talked about how all of their problems were related to Israel rather than maybe they created their problems themselves. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sydney, if you have a question for Cheryl, she's over there on the front lines. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and we're talking to Cheryl Hancock, who's living in, of course, West Jerusalem at the present time, and giving us an up-to-date report on what's taking place over in Israel. And Sydney, the Israeli Arabs are doing everything they can to disrupt things there. Certainly the Israeli Arabs really live far better off than the Palestinians, don't they?
Yeah, they do. In the West Bank, the average income is between $300 and $500 a month for a family of maybe 8 children. So in Israel proper, you get a normal wage as you would in America, something similar. And they, of course, have all the rights as any Israeli does, you know, to vote, to work, and they live side by side. And it's a good life in Israel. It's a democratic society, and everyone's working together and doing well. But with these attacks happening, I know you've heard of the bulldozer attacks, where these people are working on a railroad track that's going to go from Bethlehem to northern Israel. And as they're working on it, these bulldozer drivers are, of course, hired. Some of them are Arab. And they have been smashing cars and killing people. You never know when you're down the street, walking downtown, or wherever you're at, if you're going to be attacked. Somebody that's going to run up and attack you with a knife, with rocks, with whatever. So it's a very dangerous situation right now. On Fridays, you should not go into the old city of Jerusalem, because that's when they have their mosque, their prayers at the mosque. And afterwards, they're so incited. It's almost like a pep rally. They pep the people up to attack their enemies. And their enemies are not only the Jewish people, but they're the Westerners. They say that America's the great Satan. So if I, as a Westerner, go into East Jerusalem or into Jerusalem that day, and they're incited, I would be one that would be under attack, too.
Now, if you're talking about the old city of Jerusalem, you mean that's all, the whole of the old city is pretty much off limits? I thought there were certainly enclaves there that were predominantly Christian or Armenian.
Right. No, I'm not saying that the whole city is off limits. I'm saying in the Muslim quarter, they have a mosque. On the top of the Temple Mount, they have the Dome of the Rock, and they have
right.
an Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Right.
The Al-Aqsa Mosque is where they go for their prayers, and there's thousands of them that go up there. And a lot of their prayers is not praying that so-and-so would be healed and that we'd have peace in the land, but it would be to dominate. This is what an Islamic Jihad member told me. He said, we pray to dominate the land, to conquer our enemies so we can divide their women among us. These are the kind of prayers that come out of there. And so when they come out of the mosque, they're incited. They're ready to attack anyone that's not following them or that are like them, especially the Jewish people or American people that have come against them. So I would say the part that's really dangerous is near the old the Muslim quarter. And I personally stay out of Jerusalem as much as possible on Friday. And East Jerusalem is very dangerous. There's been riots there, demonstrations. They burn tires, they burn buildings, they burn cars, they attack the soldiers. And where I lived, I realized that it has hardly any patrol of Israeli police or soldiers. So you're there alone. And these are areas you just want to kind of avoid at certain times. Their prayers go from 11:30 to 1:30, something like that, and then they come out of the mosque. I'm giving the wrong times, but that's about the time, in the middle of the day, and you just want to avoid certain areas. You learn that as you live here, where to go and where not to go.
Well, of course, are tourists still coming over there and going up on the Temple Mount and touring the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque?
Sure, yeah. We have more tourists this year since the year 2000. That's how much tourism has picked up, thank God, because both the Israeli Arabs and the Jews need this income from the tourists. And as they go up to the Temple Mount, they make, you know, their appointments. They go at certain times on certain days, and they're guided and they're guarded. And you see tour groups all over Jerusalem. So the tourists, none of the tourists have been attacked at this point. But mainly I'm talking about individuals getting into an area where you shouldn't, or just walking into a very Arab or Muslim area.
How about over there on the top of the Mount of Olives? Is that fairly safe, mm-hmm. or is that rather dangerous?
No, I had a friend here recently from California, and I was showing him around, and I avoided the Mount of Olives. The last time I was on the Mount of Olives, this was before the conflict, I was having some pizza in an Arab-run restaurant, and there people scratched my car up so bad I can't get the scratches out. And this is done just as people are walking down the street. They have no respect for the Westerners. Jews usually don't go on the Mount of Olives. But now even the Westerners are being targeted, and I will not go on the Mount of Olives at this point. I play it safe because I don't need to risk my life in that. I'd rather risk my life in bringing hope to people.
Well, we just don't want you risking your life at all, Cheryl. We want you to stay safe so you can keep us appraised of what's going on over there. And of course, Cheryl's been over to our home visiting us when she's taking a trip back to the United States. Cheryl, would you like to get any information out, a website, or how people can get in touch with the organization that you work with? Cheryl?
I really wasn't prepared for that, but, you know, I will just give my email address. And if people want to write, they can. I have an email update that I put out every week, and there's a lot of people on it, and it's getting a little bit more popular because of what's happening here. But my email address is grateful, G-R-A-T-E-F-U-L, at fastforlife.org.
That is grateful at fastforlife.org?
Right. And they can get in touch with me directly, and I can then tell them which websites to go to pick up the news the best.
And of course, we get the
quickest reports.
And we get the email, of course, every week, and we look forward to Cheryl keeping us abreast of what's going on. We can't get over there on our own, not doing 5 hours of talk radio a day, but certainly reading her summaries of what's going on, her experiences, her description of her experiences, why in some ways we feel that we're sharing in what she does. So, and we do, incidentally, help support Cheryl's ministry. We think it's a very, very important thing that she's doing over there. Of course, it's certainly and keeping us here in the West appraised of what's going on in what is truly the center of Christendom, the center of the Muslim faith, the center of the Jewish faith. Jerusalem is certainly the holy city, and I think it's so important that people understand that so much of what's going on in the world centers about what goes on in Jerusalem. Well, you know, do you think that they're going to really finish the job up down there in Hamas and just hang in there, get rid of Hamas, and do you think they're going to have a permanent occupation? Because they're almost going to have a permanent occupation there to keep the Hamas from coming back again.
Right. Well, they're discussing now what to do when this operation is over, and they know they have to stop Hamas, and they're going to do everything they can to stop them so they cannot do this again. But one of the ideas was to let Egypt control Hamas and the Gaza Strip. It's separated from the rest of the West Bank, and of course they wanted to make that into the Palestinian state along with, you know, Jericho and Bethlehem and all of them. But right now, Abu Mazen is actually the prime minister, supposedly, of the Palestinian people, and in order to make two-state solution here with Israel and the Palestinian state, and they want Abu Mazen to be the prime minister, but Hamas is controlling Gaza, which is supposed to be part of the Palestinian Authority of the West Bank. So they have to come up with another idea if Hamas is not going to be neutralized and Abu Mazen will take over. Now, Fatah is the other militant group under Abu Mazen, under the Palestinian Authority, and Hamas, of course, is their own. And Hamas and Fatah have been fighting since they took power in Gaza. They lay down the Fatah militants, and they shoot them while they're laying there on the ground. I've seen a lot, and I've heard a lot of what's going on. They're fighting amongst each other who's going to get power over this Palestinian state, and that's part of what's going on. So we don't know. We don't know what the outcome will be and what will be negotiated at this point.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting. They held elections in the Palestinian region. And, of course, Abbas, who, of course, was the one who was favored by the United States and Israel, Abbas lost. And, of course, the people voted, of course, to support Hamas. I mean, the people tragically were supporting the militant arm of what's going on. Both Abbas and Hamas were terrorists, but Abbas was at least virulent terrorist, or leader of Fatah. Well, now, of course, you know, why didn't the United States support the democratically elected government over there, which was Hamas? Why did we immediately abandon this whole idea of democracy when the guy that we didn't like got elected?
Yeah, it's a good question, but Hamas has been labeled as a terrorist organization, and they can't have a terrorist organization run a state that they create here in Israel. Now, Fatah, as I talk to my Palestinian friends, they say Fatah is no better than Hamas. The reason they voted for Hamas is because Hamas has been making, building hospitals for the people and giving aid to the people. They are more religious, Muslim. They help the people. That's part of what they do. They're supposed to help each other. And Fatah is more to themselves. So they wanted to get rid of Fatah. They say they are corrupt. The Palestinian Authority is corrupt. It was under Arafat. And so they voted for Hamas. They thought there would be a nice change. Instead of a nice change, there was a bad change. And these Hamas people are using the people as pawns, just as the Palestinian Authority did. I can't talk too much against the Palestinian Authority because they're trying to work with the Palestinian Authority to make a Palestinian state. So Abu Mazen, as you said, is the better of the two evils. And if they're going to be able to work with anyone, it would be with Fatah and Abu Mazen. And I have to add, before I get too far into this, and say that I am not pro-Israel or pro-Palestinian. I have to be in the middle. And I have to say that because I work with Palestinian people. I've worked with Muslim people. I believe that the Lord can bring hope to both sides, and the fighting could stop. But you have to start with peace in your heart and love, loving your neighbors. And this is not what's going on right now. They're not loving their neighbors. So part of what I do is try to bring hope and try to teach them a better way. And I've done that for the past almost 10 years. And I've seen a lot of changes in Israel or Arab lives. And so I have Arab friends. So I'm not trying to put down the Arab people at all. Some of my closest friends are Arab people. Some of my closest friends are Jews. So I try to stay in the middle and say, we are here to love all people as our Lord did and be an example.
And I think that, of course, is what it's really all about. I mean, there are problems with both sides. There are good people on both sides. And I think that so much of what's going on over there is everybody is being exploited. The Israelis are being exploited. The Palestinians are being exploited. And somebody's got to be over there and say, look, who's funding this whole thing? Who's funding Hamas? I mean, how could it possibly be that they could build 300 tunnels there, you know, under the nose of the Egyptians? And certainly the Israelis would have had to know what they were doing. And of course, it seems like the situation drags on and on and on. And I believe that God has a part in what's taking place over there, and God has a plan for what's going to occur, or I don't know what it is. It almost seems like there is no possible way that they're ever going to get peace, and I don't believe there is unless God intervenes. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I've talked to many people about that on both sides, and they agree there is never going to be peace here in the Middle East until the Messiah, they say, comes or comes back, however it is you believe. But yes, that's what we're waiting for. Now, there are pockets of peace. I went to the Barzilai Hospital, which is in Ashkelon, and at this hospital, I talked to the deputy director. He has been taking patients, wounded people, from Gaza for a long time. He takes patients if they're sick. He works with the hospital in Gaza by phone, and they send them. They don't have the facilities sometimes to take care of people in Gaza, so they send them to this hospital. And when I talked to him, he said, we have wounded Hamas members here, and we have wounded IDF soldiers here, and they are in beds side by side, and we treat them all as human beings. We're not looking who they are or what they are or what they've done. We are trying to treat them as human beings. And I said, well, how did the soldiers get along with Hamas and vice versa as they're laying there side by side? He said, you know what? The only thing they really care about is getting better. It was an amazing thing to see at this hospital.
And I think that's really what it's all about. And people have to understand that soldiers are manipulated to hate the people on the other side. And if left alone, why, I believe the Israelis and the Palestinians could get along fine. But nobody's going to let them get along because they're people who really are generating the hatred and the antagonism there. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Cheryl, who's certainly on the front lines of this battle and is giving her life to try to, perhaps encourage people to begin looking behind the scenes and trying to come into a personal relationship with our Lord. Certainly, is there really any sort of religious movement, a working or Christian movement within the Palestinian occupied area? And what's happening to the Christian Palestinians? Don't they come under tremendous pressure?
Yeah, the believers in the Palestinian areas now, I talked to somebody last night that was in touch with one of the believers in Gaza. They are in the same boat as the rest of the Gazans that are there. And these Christians are not given food and supplies by Hamas because they're known as Christian families, which are enemies to Islam. So they are cut off from supplies. Now, when they have 3 hours, everyone can go run out to the stores and buy what they need. But this 3-hour ceasefire just started last week. The people that my friend talked to were starving. Their families were starving. These are believers. They are treated very bad by the Islamic people. And most of the religious Islamic people, and a lot of them have been killed, a lot of them have been tortured. One man is now in a hospital in another country. He was sent out because he's been burned, 30% of his body. And I just got a report last night from a friend. And so they're having a very difficult time. Now also, going into Gaza, the IDF soldiers, you got to realize almost 100 of those IDF soldiers are Christians, born-again believers. And they go in there to fight the Hamas people. Now this puts them in a predicament, because they are, you know, a mandatory army. They are local Israelis. And they could come across believers in Gaza. And so there are people praying for the believers, and we really need prayer for our brothers that are in there, but also for all the people that are under the same pressure. Yes, the Christians are having a very difficult time, especially now in all the West Bank areas. They are hated. And it's getting worse. It's escalating.
And I really think, of course, that the only thing we can do over here is prayer and pray for the, you know, for the peace of that area, pray for the peace of Jerusalem, pray for peace in the Palestinian area. But you have to get the people away from their Muslim faith, which is actually preaches hatred and violence. That is part of the very essence of the Muslim faith. And we carry a wonderful book, What You Should Know About the Quran. That's What You Should Know About the Quran, or What Every American Should Know About the Quran. And people here have to understand that this is an entirely different faith, that the people look at the world through different eyes, and violence is part and parcel of the religion. And of course, it's not that the people are bad, but the religion certainly leads them away from the truth, and certainly, I believe, leads them away from the God of the Bible.
Yeah, it's right, and they have a different mindset, and after working with them for so many years, I realize even the ones that become Christians, they still have this different mindset. It's an Eastern mindset, not a Western mindset. And I don't understand it completely, but I do understand it's so different that we can be talking about the same thing but be on two different pages. And so it's not good, but talking about the Palestinians and what they're teaching their children, I'm talking about the religious Muslims, what they're teaching their children is to become martyrs, become suicide bombers. At 8 years old, you see them with guns. You know, some of them are play guns until they get to a certain age. Then they have real guns. I think it's 13 or 14. They put guns in their hands.
Hold that thought, Cheryl. We'll be back in just a moment. All right.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
And type in Cheryl Hancock and get to her website, and she doesn't ask for funds, but she does need funds to be over there, and certainly we contribute to her. We think what she's doing is important, and we hope many of you will as well. She risks her life every day over there to try to bring the love of the Lord to the people, both Palestinian and Israeli. Well, this is the time when we have to mention that Radio Liberty is listener supported, and if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Where did Hamas came from? It was organized by the Central Intelligence Agency and by the Israeli government. And if you want to get the background of how this whole situation came about, you need to get a book we carry called The Devil's Game. That's The Devil's Game. And you'll find out that the CIA has organized many of these radical Islamist movements. Why would rational people do that? Well, because we're not dealing with rational people. They always have an excuse, but behind everything are powerful spiritual forces, which I believe are moving things in the Near East and the Middle East to a crescendo and a coming great war that's going to be fought there. And of course, that gets us into the fact that the American government has been actually working behind the scenes, covertly and secretly, to transfer nuclear technology to Pakistan so they could have their nuclear weapons in preparation for the coming nuclear war in that area. And if you haven't read my January 2008 newsletter, that's my January 2008 newsletter, let me suggest that you get that, you read it. It's available at RadioLiberty.com. It tells the story of Sybil Edmonds, a woman who discovered this spy ring working at the highest level of our State Department. But the thing was that the State Department knew about it, and the FBI knew about it, and they weren't allowed to stop the transfer of nuclear technology to the Iranians, to the Pakistanis, who shared it with the Iranians, who shared it with the Libyans, who shared it with the North Koreans. Did you ever stop to wonder, you know, how a third world nation like North Korea, that can't even feed its own people, could build a nuclear bomb? Well, they got the information from Pakistan. Where did Pakistan get it from? My good old Uncle Sam. The Sybil Edmonds story, January 2008 newsletter, about the transfer of nuclear technology to Pakistan, and I believe in preparation for the coming war, and it involves every level of our government, the Justice Department, the FBI, the State Department, and yes, even the Supreme Court of the United States is in on the scam. Read my January 2008 newsletter and weep, and then help us get the truth out across America. The book, The Devil's Game, of course, we carry the book, of course, See No Evil by Robert Baer, who will tell you about what happened in Iraq. He was a CIA agent there who said he never met an Iraqi who didn't believe that